Welcome to Postcast tonight. The Utah Jazz defeat the Orlando Magic by 40. I'm David Locke along with Ron Boone. This is our Facebook Live postgame show. You can catch it every day live at Utah Jazz or at Facebook.com/UtahJazz, or you can grab it here on the Locked On Jazz podcast feed after every game as well. It is the largest, equaling the largest road win in Jazz history. They did this against the Clippers once before. It is the largest home loss in franchise history by the Orlando Magic. And the Jazz led by 4 at the end of one. They led by 16 at the half. They then stretched it out to 31 at the end of 3 and won it by 40, Ron. This was a whitewash.
Yes, it was an unexpected whitewash. I mean, the Jazz been struggling to win on the road. You expect for them to come out and play well and play the best they can. Just didn't expect for them to overpower a team like they did. Now, as you mentioned, awfully tough to win coming off a long road trip, coming back home, because it's like an extended road trip when you come back home and play that first basketball game. But you don't expect for a team to shoot as poorly as the Orlando Magic did, and the Jazz just blistered them.
So in the first half of this game, a lot of our call was the Magic were missing some shots. Like, we thought the Jazz were good, but the Magic got a bunch of good looks. And the Jazz were playing well offensively. Really, Faves had a very, very good first half along the way. He had 17 points, 6 rebounds, and 2 assists. There was a 13-3 run where the Jazz kind of took control of it, and that got them the 15-point lead. But there was this kind of feeling that the Magic, who came into the game as the fourth best three-point shooting team, which is probably not what they are. That's a little high. So they were going to come back to reality. You know, we went to Houston and they were like 29th in the league in 3, and you were like, uh-oh. Yeah. Oh, no. I remember prepping today thinking, okay, they're not this good. Maybe this is the night they start missing. So it did seem as though that started to happen. The Jazz were up 15. Then the Jazz blew this game out when Rodney Hood went ballistic. He scored 21 points in 6 minutes and 30 seconds. And absolutely took the game over with incredible, remarkable shooting. Very reminiscent of what he did against Charlotte 2 years ago and the Lakers, or Charlotte maybe 2 or 3 years ago and Charlotte. He's done this before, but when he gets into a different place.
Well, yeah, 10 points at the half, end up getting 10 points there in the third period, but 3 three-point shots, and that carried over to early. To the
I had him with 15 in the third.
I'm sorry, 15 in the third. My math is, I need a calculator to get that. But 15 there in the third, and that carried over to in the early part of the fourth quarter. I mean, you get on a roll like that, and I was very impressed that Quinn let him play. He was hot. You just riding, and even though the Jazz, the ball game was out of hand, you just gave Rodney a chance to feel what that's like, and because he hadn't experienced it in a long time, and I was impressed with Quinn letting him play.
The thing that jumps out to me on this one tonight about the way the Jazz kind of went about things was the ball movement, the player movement. And this is actually, you know, they haven't played very good defensive team yet in this sequence. But since the Gobert injury and since they've gone to a spread floor, they've been a pretty good offensive team. And maybe they're learning how to play a little differently offensively.
Well, you remember what they had? What did I say they had in the first half as far as assists? They had 11 assists, 11 of the 17. Anyway, they ended up with 31 assists tonight. And that's remarkable. They played, I thought, for three quarters anyway, the way they played the first quarter in New York. Now, even though New York had kind of outscored them in that first quarter, I think by 2, the Jazz were moving, and they're moving their bodies. They had good shots, and they shot a very good percentage. And as a result, you know, they were in that basketball game. I thought they played for three quarters that same way here tonight.
Jazz have scored 60 or more points in 3 of the last 5 first quarters. This really is a totally different team without Rudy Gobert. It's been a very good offensive team, probably great now, and really been a very bad defensive team, and they were okay tonight. Orlando is a team that offensively over the last 8 games have been 20th and 22nd in the league, so, you know, they may not have been a great offensive team, but this is a really weird thing to watch here because the Jazz have not – they've figured out how to play offense. They have not figured out how to play defense without Rudy Gobert. Tonight the offense was so great it may not have mattered. But this is the process that Quinn's going through, is trying to figure out this team and what they're going to be defensively without Rudy Gobert.
You're so right. That is what Quinn is going through right now. And I'm just thinking here while you're talking, because Quinn was saying that from game to game, you know, our defense is going to change dramatically.
Oh, that was a combination. That is a new word. Can we use that? It's a combination of dramatic and drastic, all in one.
Right.
Drastically.
Because of Rudy not being, and from team to team. I mean, obviously, your defense changes. We want to do this. We want to do that against this team. But it's really going to be probably over-exaggerated from team to team. So, do we get too excited about our offense right now? You know, we had some spurts like this at the beginning of the year when Ricky was shooting the basketball very well, and I think our fans would get too excited about our offense when it really came back to the level that we thought it was going to be.
So a lot of questions coming on Facebook. Is this a fluke? So, to some extent, yes. I don't know what our final offensive rating was tonight, and I'm not sure I can get it for you. I'm trying to do it, but I don't think I can find it for you. I think our offensive rating was about a 135, 140 tonight. Like, yes, that's a fluke. That's where everything goes right on a given night. The offense being good in the lineup that they have right now is a proof to Quinn Snyder's offensive system, and if it's given spacing, what it can do, which it has not had a lot except for last year when Joe Johnson started playing, and the same thing happened. The offense was unbelievably good. So to Quinn's credit, I think he can build an offense when he has spacing, which he doesn't have when Favors, Gobert, and Ruby are on the floor together. The other one, and I'm going to be really quite frank about this, Ricky Rubio tonight took 9 shots. If Ricky Rubio can get back into his rightful place, which is 5th or 6th on the team in shot attempts, then there's a chance the team can be good offensively. But when Rubio was taking your 2nd and 3rd most amount of shots, you are not going to be a good offensive team, because he does not have a track record that says he's going to make enough shots, and it's not what he does well. So a little of that has happened here as well. Neto played 24 minutes. Rubio's on a minutes restriction, and Neto's been really good the last few nights.
Yeah, you can see Nettles' line was awfully good. I was just looking for his assist that he had. I think he led the team in assists tonight, didn't he? Ended up with 7. Rubio ended up with 3. And I'm going back to the Brooklyn game, I think, where Rubio ended up taking 9 shots, and I think he had 11 assists in that ball game. And we had discussed that that's what we envision with Rubio. I mean, to the point where he's taking 9-10 shots a game, but really getting those assists and those steals. I mean, that's what I envisioned him being when he came to this team, not leading this team in field goal attempts. Now, can we survive with him taking that many shots? No, I really don't. But does he pass those shots up? I mean, you can't, if they're going to leave him open, you really can't pass those shots.
You
got
to find something to do though, other than shoot. Yeah, whether exactly. It's to penetrate and flatten the defense out and then make a pass out of that or something. Neto's played well. Worth noting also, in the 2 games in which Favors has been really good, it's been against equally as big but not mobile big. So Mozgov started in Brooklyn and he killed him. He killed Vucevic tonight. It's also Neto tonight was very good against a non-offensive-minded point guard in Elfrid Payton. Neto's weakness is that against good offensive players, he's too small and he can't take advantage. So there's some matchup things that were good tonight also.
Yeah, and you're going to see that from game to game. And so a lot of coaches will try to take advantage of that. You know, they watch enough film to know that, okay, Rodney Hood is going to be good against this player because of this, that, and other. I mean, that's how technical I think teams are nowadays with trying to put together an offense or defense. Neto, being the size as he is not as dynamic as, you know, some of the other small guards in the league that's really good. The guard that went from, what's his name? Place where he's hurt. Cleveland.
Kyrie Irving?
Boston. 5 foot.
Isaiah Thomas?
Isaiah Thomas, yes. Now, as small as he is dynamic offensively. Neto's not like that. Neto's more under control, but he gets to his spots. He's good at doing exactly what he's capable of doing out there on the floor, but he's not, you know, like an Isaiah Thomas.
And this last one's going to be for Spence Checkets. I want you to read this. Here was Bowler's tweet right there, and look what Spence said over the top of it.
You punched Harp? Bowler said, finally, and you said, and then Spence says, you punched Harp?
I think Bowler meant a win. That wraps us up tonight. Congratulations to Spence Checkets. He just won Twitter tonight. See ya.